This is Audible.
Harper Audio presents Feeling Good, The New Mood Therapy by David D. Burns, M.D. Read by George Newbern. To make the most of your listening experience, all of the tables, charts, and the complete consumer's guide to antidepressant drug therapy appear on the accompanying PDF enhancement to this audiobook. When a figure, table, or quiz is referred to in the audio, please refer to the PDF enhancement for further information. Preface. I am pleased that David Burns is making available to the general public an approach to mood modification which has stimulated much interest and excitement among mental health professionals. Dr. Burns has condensed years of research conducted at the University of Pennsylvania on the causes and treatments of depression, and lucidly presents the essential self-help component of the specialized treatment that has derived from that research. The book is an important contribution to those who wish to give themselves a top-flight education in understanding and mastering their moods. A few words about the evolution of cognitive therapy may interest readers of Feeling Good, The New Mood Therapy. Soon after I began my professional career as an enthusiastic student and practitioner of traditional psychoanalytic psychiatry, I began to investigate the empirical support for the Freudian theory and therapy of depression. While such support proved elusive, the data I obtained in my quest suggested a new testable theory about the causes of emotional disturbances. The research seemed to reveal that the depressed individual sees himself as a loser, as an inadequate person, doomed to frustration, deprivation, humiliation, and failure. Further experiments showed a marked difference between the depressed person's self-evaluation, expectations, the aspirations on the one hand, and his actual achievements, often very striking, on the other. My conclusion was that depression must involve a disturbance in thinking. The depressed person thinks in idiosyncratic and negative ways about himself, his environment, and his future. The pessimistic mental set affects his mood, his motivation, and his relationships with others, and leads to the full spectrum of psychological and physical symptoms typical of depression. We now have a large body of research data and clinical experience which suggests that people can learn to control painful mood swings and self-defeating behavior through the application of a few relatively simple principles and techniques. The promising results of this investigation have triggered interest in cognitive theory among psychiatrists, psychologists, and other mental health professionals. Many writers have viewed our findings as a major development in the scientific study of psychotherapy and personal change. The developing theory of the emotional disorders that underlies this research has become the subject of intensive investigations at academic centers around the world. Dr. Burns clearly describes this advance in our understanding of depression. He presents in simple language innovative and effective methods for altering painful depressed moods and reducing debilitating anxiety. I expect that readers of this book will be able to apply to their own problems the principles and techniques evolved in our work with patients. While those individuals with more severe emotional disturbances will need the help of a mental health professional, individuals with more manageable problems can benefit by using the newly developed common sense coping skills which Dr. Burns delineates. Thus, Feeling Good should prove to be an immensely useful step-by-step guide for people who wish to help themselves. Finally, this book reflects the unique personal flair of its author, whose enthusiasm and creative energy have been his particular gifts to his patients and to his colleagues. Aaron T. Beck, M.D., Professor of Psychiatry, University of Pennsylvania, School of Medicine. Introduction, Revised Edition, 1999. I have been amazed by the interest in cognitive behavioral therapy that has developed since Feeling Good was first published in 1980. At that time, very few people had heard of cognitive therapy. Since that time, cognitive therapy has caught on in a big way among mental health professionals and the general public as well. In fact, cognitive therapy has become one of the most widely practiced and most intensely researched forms of psychotherapy in the world. Why such interest in this particular brand of psychotherapy? There are at least three reasons. First, the basic ideas are very down-to-earth and intuitively appealing. Second, many research studies have confirmed that cognitive therapy can be very helpful for individuals suffering depression and anxiety and a number of other common problems as well. In fact, cognitive therapy appears to be at least as helpful as the best antidepressant medications, such as Prozac. And third, many successful self-help books, including My Own Feeling Good, have created a strong popular demand for cognitive therapy in the United States and throughout the world as well. Before I explain some of the exciting new developments, let me briefly explain what cognitive therapy is. A cognition is a thought or perception. In other words, your cognitions are the way you are thinking about things at any moment, including this very moment. These thoughts scroll across your mind automatically and often have a huge impact on how you feel. For example, right now you are probably having some thoughts and feelings about this book. If you picked this book up because you have been feeling depressed and discouraged, you may be thinking about things in a negative, self-critical way. I'm such a loser. What's wrong with me? I'll never get better. A stupid self-help book like this couldn't possibly help me. I don't have any problem with my thoughts. My problems are real. If you are feeling angry or annoyed, you may be thinking, this guy Burns is just a con artist and he's just trying to get rich. He probably doesn't even know what he's talking about. And if you are feeling optimistic and interested, you may be thinking, hey, this is interesting. I may learn something really exciting and helpful. In each case, your thoughts create your feelings. This example illustrates the powerful principle at the heart of cognitive therapy. Your feelings result from the messages you give yourself. In fact, your thoughts often have much more to do with how you feel than what is actually happening in your life. This isn't a new idea. Nearly 2,000 years ago, the Greek philosopher Epictetus stated that people are disturbed not by things, but by the views we take of them. In the book of Proverbs, chapter 23, verse 7, in the Old Testament, you can find this passage, "For as he thinks within himself, so he is." And even Shakespeare expressed a similar idea when he said, "For there is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." Hamlet, Act 2, Scene 2. Although the idea has been around for ages, most depressed people do not really comprehend it. If you feel depressed, you may think it is because of bad things that have happened to you. You may think you are inferior and destined to be unhappy because you failed in your work or were rejected by someone you loved. You may think your feelings of inadequacy result from some personal defect. You may feel convinced you are not smart enough, successful enough, attractive enough, or talented enough to feel happy and fulfilled. You may think your negative feelings are the result of an unloving or traumatic childhood, or bad genes you inherited, or a chemical or hormonal imbalance of some type. Or you may blame others when you get upset. It's these lousy, stupid drivers that tick me off when I drive to work. If it weren't for these jerks, I'd be having a perfect day. And nearly all depressed people are convinced that they are facing some special, awful truth about themselves and the world, and that their terrible feelings are absolutely realistic and inevitable. Certainly all these ideas contain an important germ of truth. Bad things do happen, and life beats up on most of us at times. Many people do experience catastrophic losses and confront devastating personal problems. Our genes, hormones, and childhood experiences probably do have an impact on how we think and feel. And other people can be annoying, cruel, or thoughtless. But all these theories about the causes of our bad moods have the tendency to make us victims, because we think the causes result from something beyond our control. After all, there is little we can do to change the way people drive at rush hour, or the way we are treated when we were young, or our genes, or body chemistry, save taking a pill. In contrast, you can learn to change the way you think about things, and you can also change your basic values and beliefs. And when you do, you will often experience profound and lasting changes in your mood, outlook, and productivity. That, in a nutshell, is what cognitive therapy is all about. The theory is straightforward and may even seem overly simple, but don't write it off as pop psychology. I think you will discover that cognitive therapy can be surprisingly helpful, even if you feel pretty skeptical, as I did, when you first learn about it. I have personally conducted more than 30,000 cognitive therapy sessions with hundreds of depressed and anxious individuals, and I'm always surprised about how helpful and powerful this method can be. The effectiveness of cognitive therapy has been confirmed by many outcome studies by researchers throughout the world during the past two decades. In a recent landmark article entitled Psychotherapy versus Medication for Depression, Challenging the Conventional Wisdom with Data, Drs. David O. Antonocchio and William G. Danton from the University of Nevada and Dr. Gerland Y. Danelsky from the Cleveland Clinic reviewed many of the most carefully conducted studies on depression that have been published in scientific journals throughout the world. The studies reviewed compared the antidepressant medications with psychotherapy in the treatment of depression and anxiety. Short-term studies as well as long-term follow-up studies were included in this review. The authors came to a number of startling conclusions that are at odds with the conventional wisdom. Although depression is conventionally viewed as a medical illness, research studies indicate that genetic influences appear to account for only about 16% of depression. For many individuals, life influences appear to be the most important causes. Drugs are the most common treatment for depression in the United States, and there is a widespread belief, popularized by the media, that drugs are the most effective treatment. However, this opinion is not consistent with the results of many carefully conducted outcome studies during the past 20 years. These studies show that the newer forms of psychotherapy, especially cognitive therapy, can be at least as effective as drugs, and for many patients appear to be more effective. This is good news for individuals who prefer to be treated without medications, due to personal preferences or health concerns. It is also good news for the millions of individuals who have not responded adequately to antidepressants after years and years of treatment and who still struggle with depression and anxiety. Following recovery from depression, patients treated with psychotherapy are more likely to remain undepressed and are significantly less likely to relapse than patients treated with antidepressants alone. This is especially important because of the growing awareness that many people relapse following recovery from depression, especially if they are treated with antidepressant medications alone without any talking therapy. Based on these findings, Dr. Antonocchio and his co-authors concluded that psychotherapy should not be considered a second-rate treatment, but should usually be the initial treatment for depression. In addition, they emphasized that cognitive therapy appears to be one of the most effective psychotherapies for depression, if not the most effective. Of course, medications can be helpful for some individuals, even life-saving. Medications can be combined with psychotherapy for maximum effect as well, especially when the depression is severe. It is extremely important to know that we have powerful new weapons to fight depression and that drug-free treatments such as cognitive therapy can be highly effective. Recent studies indicate that psychotherapy can be helpful not only for mild depressions, but also for severe depressions as well. These findings are at odds with the popular belief that talking therapy can only help people with mild problems, and that if you have a serious depression, you need to be treated with drugs. Although we are taught that depression may result from an imbalance in brain chemistry, recent studies indicate that cognitive behavioral therapy may actually change brain chemistry. In these studies, Drs. Lewis R. Baxter, Jr., Jeffrey M. Schwartz, Kenneth S. Bergman, and their colleagues at UCLA School of Medicine used positron emission tomography, PET scanning, to evaluate changes in brain metabolism in two groups of patients before and after treatment. One group received cognitive behavioral therapy and no drugs, and the other group received an antidepressant medication and no psychotherapy. As one might expect, there were changes in brain chemistry in the patients in the drug therapy group who improved. These changes indicated that their brain metabolism had slowed down. In other words, the nerves in a certain region of the brain appeared to become more relaxed. What came as quite a surprise was there were similar changes in the brains of the patients successfully treated with cognitive behavioral therapy. However, these patients received no medications. Further, there were no significant differences in the brain changes in the drug therapy and psychotherapy groups, or in the effectiveness of the two treatments. Because of these and other similar studies, Investigators are starting for the first time to entertain the possibility that cognitive behavior therapy, the methods described in this book, may actually help people by changing the chemistry and architecture of the human brain. Although no one treatment will ever be a panacea, research studies indicate that cognitive therapy can be helpful for a variety of disorders in addition to depression. For example, in several studies, patients with panic attacks have responded so well to cognitive therapy without any medications that many experts now consider cognitive therapy alone to be the best treatment for this disorder. Cognitive therapy can also be helpful in many other forms of anxiety, such as chronic worrying, phobias, obsessive-compulsive disorder, and post-traumatic stress disorder, and is also being used with some success in the personality disorders, such as borderline personality disorder. Cognitive therapy is gaining popularity in the treatment of many other disorders as well. At the 1998 Stanford Psychopharmacology Conference, I was intrigued by the presentation by a colleague from Stanford, Dr. Stuart Agras. Dr. Agras is a renowned expert in eating disorders such as binge eating, anorexia nervosa, and bulimia. He presented the results of numerous recent studies on the treatment of eating disorders with antidepressant medications versus psychotherapy. These studies indicated that cognitive behavior therapy is the most effective treatment for eating disorders, better than any known drug or any other form of psychotherapy. We are also beginning to learn more about how cognitive therapy works. One important discovery is that self-help seems to be a key to recovery whether or not you receive treatment. In a series of 5 remarkable studies published in the prestigious Journal of Consulting in Clinical Psychology and in The Gerontologist, Dr. Forrest Scoggin and his colleagues at the University of Alabama study the effects of simply reading a good self-help book like Feeling Good without any other therapy. The name of this new type of treatment is bibliotherapy, reading therapy. They discovered that feeling good bibliotherapy may be as effective as a full course of psychotherapy or treatment with the best antidepressant drugs. Given the tremendous pressures to cut healthcare costs, this is of considerable interest, since a paperback copy of the Feeling Good book costs less than 2 Prozac pills and is presumably free of any troublesome side effects. In a recent study, Dr. Scoggin and his colleague, Dr. Christine Jameson, randomly assigned 80 individuals seeking treatment for a major depressive episode to one of 2 groups. The researchers gave the patients in the first group a copy of my Feeling Good and encouraged them to read it within 4 weeks. This group was called the Immediate Bibliotherapy Group. These patients also received a booklet containing blank copies of the self-help forms in the book in case they decided to do some of the suggested exercises in the book. Patients in the second group were told they would be placed on a 4-week waiting list before beginning treatment. This group was called the Delayed Bibliotherapy Group because these patients were not given a copy of Feeling Good until the second 4 weeks of the study. The patients in the Delayed Bibliotherapy Group served as a control group to make sure that any improvement in the immediate bibliotherapy was not just due to the passage of time. At the initial evaluation, the researchers administered 2 depression tests to all the patients. One was the Beck Depression Inventory, BDI, a time-honored self-assessment test that patients fill out on their own. And the second was the Hamilton Rating Scale for Depression, HRSD, which is administered by trained depression researchers. As you can see in Figure 1, there was no difference in the depression levels in the 2 groups at the initial evaluation. You can also see that the average scores for the patients in the immediate bibliotherapy group and the delayed bibliotherapy group at the initial evaluation were both around 20 or above on the BDI and on the HRSD. These scores indicate that the depression levels in both groups were similar to the depression levels in most published studies of antidepressants or psychotherapy. In fact, the BDI score was nearly identical to the average BDI scores of approximately 500 patients seeking treatment at my clinic in Philadelphia during the late 1980s. Every week, a research assistant called the patients in both groups and administered the BDI by telephone. The assistant also answered any questions patients had about the study and encouraged the patients in the immediate bibliotherapy group to try to complete the book within 4 weeks. These calls were limited to 10 minutes and no counseling was offered. At the end of the 4 weeks, the 2 groups were compared. You can see in Figure 1 that the patients in the immediate bibliotherapy group improved considerably. In fact, the average scores on both the BDI and HRSD were around 10 or below, scores in the range considered normal. These changes in depression were very significant. You can also see that the patients maintained their gains at the 3-month evaluation and did not relapse. In fact, there was a tendency for continued improvement following the completion of the bibliotherapy treatment. The scores on both depression tests were actually lower at the 3-month evaluation. In contrast, you can see in Figure 1 that the patients in the delayed bibliotherapy group barely changed and were still around 20 at the 4-week evaluation. This showed that the improvement from feeling good was not just due to the passage of time. Then Drs. Jameson and Scoggin gave the patients in the delayed bibliotherapy group a copy of Feeling Good and asked them to read it during the second 4 weeks of the study. Their improvement in the next 4 weeks was similar to the improvement in the immediate bibliotherapy group during the first 4 weeks of the study. You can also see in Figure 1 that the patients in both groups did not relapse but maintained their gains at the 3-month evaluation. The results of the study indicated that feeling good appeared to have substantial antidepressant effects. At the end of the first 4-week bibliotherapy period, 70% of the patients in the immediate bibliotherapy group no longer met the criteria for a major depressive episode, according to the diagnostic criteria for a major depressive episode that are outlined in the American Psychiatric Association's official Diagnostic and Statistic Manual, DSM. In fact, the improvement was so great most of these patients did not need any further treatment at the medical center. To the best of my knowledge, these are the first published scientific studies showing that a self-help book can actually have significant antidepressant effects in patients suffering from episodes of major depression. In contrast, only 3% of the patients in the delayed bibliotherapy group recovered during the first 4 weeks. In other words, the patients who did not read Feeling Good failed to improve. However, at the 3-month evaluation, when both groups had read Feeling Good, 75% of the patients in the immediate bibliotherapy group and 73% of the patients in the delayed bibliotherapy group no longer qualified for a diagnosis of major depressive episode, according to DSM criteria. The researchers compared the magnitude of the improvement in these groups with the amount of improvement in published outcome studies using antidepressant medications or psychotherapy or both. In the large National Institute of Mental Health Collaborative Depression Study, there was an average reduction of 11.6 points on the HRSD in patients who received cognitive therapy from highly trained therapists for 12 weeks. This was very similar to the 10.6 point change in the HRSD observed in the patients who read Feeling Good after just 4 weeks. However, the bibliotherapy treatment seemed to work significantly faster. My own clinical experience confirms this. In my private practice, very few patients have recovered during the first 4 weeks of treatment. The percentage of patients who dropped out of the bibliotherapy therapy was also very small, around 10%. This is less than most published outcome studies using drugs or psychotherapy, which typically have dropout rates from 15% to over 50%. Finally, the patients developed significantly more positive attitudes and thinking patterns after reading Feeling Good. This was consistent with the premise of the book, namely, that you can defeat depression by changing the negative thinking patterns that cause it. The researchers concluded that the bibliotherapy was effective for patients suffering from depression and might also have a significant role in public education and in depression prevention programs. They speculated that Feeling Good bibliotherapy might help prevent serious episodes of depression among individuals with a tendency toward negative thinking. Finally, the researchers addressed another important concern. Would the antidepressant effects of Feeling Good last? Skillful motivational speakers can get a crowd of people excited and optimistic for brief periods of time. But these brief mood-elevating effects often don't last. The same problem holds for the treatment of depression. Following successful treatment with drugs or psychotherapy, many patients feel tremendously improved, only to relapse back into depression after a period of time. These relapses can be devastating because patients feel so demoralized. In 1997, the investigators reported the results of a 3-year follow-up of the patients in the study I've just described. The authors were Drs. Nancy Smith, Mark Floyd and Forrest Scoggin from the University of Alabama, and Dr. Christine Jamison from the Tuskegee Veterans Affairs Medical Center. The researchers contacted the patients 3 years after reading Feeling Good and administered the depression tests once again. They also asked the patients several questions about how they had been doing since the completion of the study. The researchers learned that the patients did not relapse but maintained their gains during this 3-year period. In fact, the scores on the 2 depression tests at the 3-year evaluation were actually slightly better than the scores at the completion of the bibliotherapy treatment. More than half of the patients said that their moods continued to improve following the completion of the initial study. The diagnostic findings at the 3-year evaluation confirmed this. 72% of the patients still did not meet the criteria for a major depressive episode, and 70% did not seek or receive any further treatment with medications or psychotherapy during the follow-up period. Although they experienced the normal ups and downs we all feel from time to time, approximately half indicated that when they were upset, they opened up Feeling Good and reread the most helpful sections. The researchers speculated that these self-administered booster sessions may have been important in maintaining a positive outlook following recovery. 40% of the patients said that the best part of the book was that it helped them change their negative thinking patterns, such as learning to be less perfectionistic and to give up all or nothing thinking. Of course, the study had limitations, like all studies. For one thing, not every patient was cured by reading Feeling Good. No treatment is a panacea. While it is encouraging that many patients seem to respond to reading Feeling Good, it is also clear that some patients with more severe or chronic depressions will need the help of a therapist and possibly an antidepressant medication as well. This is nothing to be ashamed of. Different individuals respond better to different approaches. It is good that we now have 3 types of effective treatment for depression: antidepressant medications, individual and group psychotherapy, and bibliotherapy. Remember that you can use the cognitive bibliotherapy between therapy sessions to speed your recovery, even if you are in treatment. In fact, when I first wrote Feeling Good, this is how I imagined the book would be used. I intended it to be a tool my patients could use between therapy sessions to speed up the treatment, and never dreamed that it might someday be used alone as a treatment for depression. It appears that more and more therapists are beginning to assign bibliotherapy to their patients as psychotherapy homework between therapy sessions. In 1994, the results of a nationwide survey about the use of bibliotherapy by mental health professionals were published in the Authoritative Guide to Self-Help Books, published by Guilford Press, New York. Doctors John W. Santrock and Ann M. Minnett from the University of Texas in Dallas and Barbara D. Campbell, a research associate at the university, conducted this study. These 3 researchers surveyed 500 American mental health professionals from all 50 states and asked whether they prescribed books for patients to read between sessions to speed recovery. 70% of the therapists polled indicated that they had recommended at least 3 self-help books to their patients during the previous year, and 86% reported that these books provided a positive benefit to their patients. The therapists were also asked which self-help books from a list of 1,000 they most frequently recommended for their patients. Feeling Good was the #1 rated book for depressed patients, and my Feeling Good Handbook, published as a Plume paperback in 1989, was rated #2. I was not aware this survey was being conducted and was thrilled to learn about the results of it. One of my goals when I wrote Feeling Good was to provide reading for my own patients to speed their learning and recovery between therapy sessions, but I never dreamed this idea would catch on in such a big way. Should you expect to improve or recover after reading Feeling Good? That would be unreasonable. The research clearly indicates that while many people who read Feeling Good improved, others needed the additional help of a mental health professional. I have received many letters, probably more than 10,000, from people who read Feeling Good. Many of them kindly described in glowing terms how Feeling Good had helped them, often after years and years of unsuccessful treatment with medications and even electroconvulsive therapy. Others indicated that they found the ideas in Feeling Good appealing, but needed a referral to a good local therapist to make these ideas work for them. This is understandable. We are all different, and it would be unrealistic to think that any one book or form of therapy would be the answer for everyone. Depression is one of the worst forms of suffering because of the immense feelings of shame, worthlessness, hopelessness, and demoralization. Depression can seem worse than terminal cancer because most cancer patients feel loved and they have hope and self-esteem. Many depressed patients have told me, in fact, that they yearned for death and prayed every night that they would get cancer so they could die in dignity without having to commit suicide. But no matter how terrible your depression and anxiety may feel, the prognosis for recovery is excellent. You may be convinced that your own case is so bad, so overwhelming and hopeless, that you are the one person who will never get well, no matter what. But sooner or later, the clouds have a way of blowing away, and the sky suddenly clears and the sun begins to shine again. When this happens, the feelings of relief and joy can be overwhelming. And if you are now struggling with depression and low self-esteem, I believe this transformation can happen for you as well, no matter how discouraged or depressed you may feel. Well, it's time to get on to chapter 1 so we can start to work together. I want to wish you the very best as you read it, and hope you find these ideas and methods helpful. David D. Burns, M.D., Clinical Associate Professor of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences, Stanford University School of Medicine. Part 1. Theory and Research. Chapter 1. A Breakthrough in the Treatment of Mood Disorders. Depression has been called the world's number one public health problem. In fact, depression is so widespread it is considered the common cold of psychiatric disturbances. But there is a grim difference between depression and a cold. Depression can kill you. The suicide rate, studies indicate, has been on a shocking increase in recent years, even among children and adolescents. This escalating death rate has occurred in spite of the billions of antidepressant drugs and tranquilizers that have been dispensed during the past several decades. This might sound fairly gloomy. Before you get even more depressed, let me tell you the good news. Depression is an illness and not a necessary part of healthy living. What's more important? You can overcome it by learning some simple methods for mood elevation. A group of psychiatrists and psychologists at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine has reported a significant breakthrough in the treatment and prevention of mood disorders. Dissatisfied with traditional methods for treating depression because they found them to be slow and ineffective, these doctors developed and systematically tested an entirely new and remarkably successful approach to depression and other emotional disorders. A series of recent studies confirms that these techniques reduce the symptoms of depression much more rapidly than conventional psychotherapy or drug therapy. The name of this revolutionary treatment is cognitive therapy. I have been centrally involved in the development of cognitive therapy, and this book is the first to describe these methods to the general public. The systematic application and scientific evaluation of this approach in treating clinical depression traces its origins to the innovative work of Doctors Albert Ellis and Aaron T. Beck, who began to refine their unique approach to mood transformation in the mid-1950s and early 1960s. Their pioneering efforts began to emerge into prominence in the past decade because of the research that many mental health professionals have undertaken to refine and evaluate cognitive therapy methods at academic institutions in the United States and abroad. Cognitive therapy is a fast-acting technology of mood modification that you can learn to apply on your own. It can help you eliminate the symptoms and experience personal growth so you can minimize future upsets and cope with depression more effectively in the future. The simple effective mood control techniques of cognitive therapy provide 1. Rapid symptomatic improvement. In milder depressions, relief from your symptoms can often be observed in as short a time as 12 weeks. 2. Understanding. A clear explanation of why you get moody and what you can do to change your moods. You will learn what causes your powerful feelings, how to distinguish normal from abnormal emotions, and how to diagnose and assess the severity of your upsets. 3. Self-control. You will learn how to apply safe and effective coping strategies that will make you feel better whenever you are upset. I will guide you as you develop a practical, realistic, step-by-step self-help plan. As you apply it, your moods can come under greater voluntary control. 4. Prevention and personal growth. Genuine and long-lasting prophylaxis, prevention, of future mood swings can effectively be based on a reassessment of some basic values and attitudes which lie at the core of your tendency toward painful depressions. I will show you how to challenge and reevaluate certain assumptions about the basis for human worth. The problem-solving and coping techniques you learn will encompass every crisis in modern life, from minor irritations to major emotional collapse. These will include realistic problems, such as divorce, death, or failure, as well as those vague chronic problems that seem to have no obvious external cause, such as low self-confidence, frustration, guilt, or apathy. The question may now occur to you, is this just another self-help, pop psychology? Actually, cognitive therapy is one of the first forms of psychotherapy, which has been shown to be effective through rigorous scientific research under the critical scrutiny of the academic community. This therapy is unique in having professional evaluation and validation at the highest academic levels. It is not just another self-help fad, but a major development that has become an important part of the mainstream of modern psychiatric research and practice. Cognitive therapy's academic foundation has enhanced its impact and should give it staying power for years to come. But don't be turned off by the professional status that cognitive therapy has acquired. Unlike much traditional psychotherapy, it is not occult and anti-intuitive. It is practical and based on common sense, and you can make it work for you. The first principle of cognitive therapy is that all your moods are created by your cognitions or thoughts. A cognition refers to the way you look at things, your perceptions, mental attitudes, and beliefs. It includes the way you interpret things, what you say about something or someone to yourself. You feel the way you do right now because of the thoughts you are thinking at this moment. Let me illustrate this. How have you been feeling as you read this? You might have been thinking, cognitive therapy sounds too good to be true. It would never work for me. If your thoughts run along these lines, you are feeling skeptical or even discouraged. What causes you to feel that way? Your thoughts. You create those feelings by the dialogue you are having with yourself about this book. Conversely, you may have felt a sudden uplift in mood because you thought, hey, this sounds like something which might finally help me. Your emotional reaction is generated not by the sentences you are reading, but by the way you are thinking. The moment you have a certain thought and believe it, you will experience an immediate emotional response. Your thought actually creates the emotion. The second principle is that when you are feeling depressed, your thoughts are dominated by a pervasive negativity. You perceive not only yourself, but the entire world in dark, gloomy terms. What is even worse, you'll come to believe things really are as bad as you imagine them to be. If you are substantially depressed, you will even begin to believe that things always have been and always will be negative. As you look into your past, you remember all the bad things that have happened to you. As you try to imagine the future, you see only emptiness or unending problems and anguish. This bleak vision creates a sense of hopelessness. This feeling is absolutely illogical, but it seems so real that you have convinced yourself that your inadequacy will go on forever. The third principle is of substantial philosophical and therapeutic importance. Our research has documented that the negative thoughts which cause your emotional turmoil nearly always contain gross distortions. Although these thoughts appear valid, you will learn that they are irrational or just plain wrong, and that twisted thinking is a major cause of your suffering. The implications are important. Your depression is probably not based on accurate perceptions of reality, but is often the product of mental slippage. Suppose you believe that what I've said has validity. What good will it do you? Now we come to the most important result of our clinical research. You can learn to deal with your moods more effectively if you master methods that will help you pinpoint and eliminate the mental distortions which cause you to feel upset. As you begin to think more objectively, you will begin to feel better. How effective is cognitive therapy compared with other established and accepted methods for treating depression? Can the new therapy enable severely depressed individuals to get better without drugs? How rapidly does cognitive therapy work? Do the results last? Several years ago, a group of investigators at the Center for Cognitive Therapy at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine, including Drs. John Rush, Aaron Beck, Maria Kovacs, and Steve Holland, began a pilot study comparing cognitive therapy with one of the most widely used and effective antidepressant drugs on the market, Tofranil, imapramine hydrochloride. Over 40 severely depressed patients were randomly assigned to two groups. One group was to receive individual cognitive therapy sessions and no drugs, while the other group would be treated with Tofranil and no therapy. This either-or research design was chosen because it provided the maximum opportunity to see how the treatments compared. Up to that time, no form of psychotherapy has been shown to be as effective for depression as treatment with an antidepressant drug. This is why antidepressants have experienced such a wave of interest from the media and have come to be regarded by the professional community in the past two decades as the best treatment for most serious forms of depression. Both groups of patients were treated for a 12-week period. All patients were systematically evaluated with extensive psychological testing prior to therapy, as well as at several monthly intervals for 1 year after completion of treatment. The doctors who performed the psychological tests were not the therapists who administered the treatment. This ensured an objective assessment of the merits of each form of treatment. The patients were suffering from moderate to severe depressive episodes. The majority had failed to improve in spite of previous treatment with two or more therapists at other clinics. Three-quarters were suicidal at the time of their referral. The average patient had been troubled by chronic or intermittent depression for 8 years. Many were absolutely convinced their problems were insoluble and felt their lives were hopeless. Your own mood problems may not seem as overwhelming as theirs. A tough patient population was chosen so that the treatment could be tested under the most difficult, challenging conditions. The outcome of the study was quite unexpected and encouraging. The cognitive therapy was at least as effective as, if not more effective than, the antidepressant drug therapy. As you can see on Table 1-1, shown on the enhanced portion of this audiobook, 15 of the 19 patients treated with cognitive therapy had shown a substantial reduction of symptoms after 12 weeks of active treatment. An additional 2 individuals had improved, but were still experiencing borderline to mild depression. Only 1 patient had dropped out of treatment, and 1 had not yet begun to improve at the end of this period. In contrast, only 5 of the 25 patients assigned to antidepressant drug therapy had shown complete recovery by the end of the 12-week period. 8 of these patients dropped out of therapy as a result of the adverse side effects of the medication, and 12 others showed no improvement or only partial improvement. Of particular importance was the discovery that many patients treated with cognitive therapy improved more rapidly than those successfully treated with drugs. Within the first week or two, there was a pronounced reduction in suicidal thoughts among the cognitive therapy group. The effectiveness of cognitive therapy should be encouraging for individuals who prefer not to rely on drugs to raise their spirits, but prefer to develop an understanding of what is troubling them and to do something to cope with it. How about those patients who had not recovered by the end of 12 weeks? Like any form of treatment, this one is not a panacea. Clinical experience has shown that all individuals do not respond as rapidly, but most can nevertheless improve if they persist for a longer period of time. Sometimes this is hard work. One particularly encouraging development for individuals with refractory severe depressions is a recent study by Drs. Ivy Blackburn and her associates at the Medical Research Council at the University of Edinburgh in Scotland. These investigators have shown that the combination of antidepressant drugs with cognitive therapy can be more effective than either modality above. In my experience, the most crucial predictor of recovery is a persistent willingness to exert some effort to help yourself. Given this attitude, you will succeed. Just how much improvement can you hope for? The average cognitively treated patient experienced a substantial elimination of symptoms by the end of treatment. Many reported they felt the happiest they had ever felt in their lives. They emphasized that the mood training brought about a sense of self-esteem and confidence. No matter how miserable, depressed, and pessimistic you now feel, I am convinced that you can experience beneficial effects if you are willing to apply the methods described in this book with persistence and consistency. How long do the effects last? The findings from follow-up studies during the year after completion of treatment are quite interesting. While many individuals from both groups had occasional mood swings at various times during the year, both groups continued on the whole to maintain the gains they had demonstrated by the end of 12 weeks of active treatment. Which group actually fared better during the follow-up period? The psychological tests, as well as the patient's own reports, confirmed that the cognitive therapy group continued to feel substantially better, and these differences were statistically significant. The relapse rate over the course of the year in the cognitive therapy group was less than half that observed in the drug patients. These were sizable differences that favored the patients treated with the new approach. Does this mean that I can guarantee you will never again have the blues after using cognitive methods to eliminate your current depression? Obviously not. That would be like saying that once you have achieved good physical condition through daily jogging, you will never again be short of breath. Part of being human means getting upset from time to time, so I can guarantee you will not achieve a state of never-ending bliss. This means you will have to reapply the techniques that help you if you want to continue to master your moods. There's a difference between feeling better, which can occur spontaneously, and getting better, which results from systematically applying and reapplying the methods that will lift your mood whenever the need arises. How has this work been received by the academic community? The impact of these findings on psychiatrists, psychologists, and other mental health professionals has been substantial. It has now been 20 years since this chapter was first written. During that time, numerous well-controlled studies of the effectiveness of cognitive therapy have been published in scientific journals. These studies have compared the effectiveness of cognitive therapy with the effectiveness of antidepressant medications, as well as other forms of psychotherapy in the treatment of depression, anxiety, and other disorders. The results of these studies have been quite encouraging. Researchers have confirmed our early impressions that cognitive therapy was at least as effective as medications, and often more effective, both in the short term and in the long term. What does this all add up to? We are experiencing a crucial development in modern psychiatry and psychology, a promising new approach to understanding human emotions based on a cogent, testable therapy. Large numbers of mental health professionals are now showing a great interest in this approach, and the groundswell seems to be just beginning. Since the first edition of Feeling Good in 1980, many thousands of depressed individuals have been successfully treated with cognitive therapy. Some have considered themselves hopelessly untreatable and came to us as a last-ditch effort before committing suicide. Many others were simply troubled by the nagging tensions of daily living and wanted a greater share of personal happiness. This book is a carefully thought-out, practical application of our work, and it is designed for you. Good luck. Chapter 2. How to Diagnose Your Moods. The First Step in the Cure. Perhaps you are wondering if you have in fact been suffering from depression. Let's go ahead and see where you stand. The Burns Depression Checklist, BDC, appears as Table 2-1 on the enhanced portion of this audiobook. It's a reliable mood-measuring device that detects the presence of depression and accurately rates its severity. This simple questionnaire will take only a few minutes to complete. After you have completed the BDC, I will show you how to make a simple interpretation of the results based on your total score. Then you will know immediately whether or not you are suffering from a true depression, and if so, how severe it is. I will also lay out some important guidelines to help you determine whether you can safely and effectively treat your own blue mood using this book as your guide, or whether you have a more serious emotional disorder and might benefit from professional intervention in addition to your own efforts to help yourself. As you fill out the questionnaire, read each item carefully and put a check in the box that indicates how you have been feeling during the past few days. Make sure you check one answer for each of the 25 items. If in doubt, make your best guess. Do not leave any questions unanswered. Regardless of the outcome, this can be your first step toward emotional improvement. Interpreting the Burns Depression Checklist. Now that you have completed the test, add up the score for each of the 25 items and obtain the total. Since the highest score you can get on each of the 25 symptoms is 4, the highest score for the whole test would be 100. This would indicate the most severe depression possible. Since the lowest score for each item is 0, the lowest score for the test would be 0. This would indicate no symptoms of depression at all. You can now evaluate your depression according to Table 2-2, found on the enhancement. As you can see, the higher the total score, the more severe your depression. In contrast, the lower the score, the better you are feeling. Although the BDC is not difficult or time-consuming to fill out and score, don't be deceived by its simplicity. You have just learned to use a highly sophisticated tool for detecting depression and measuring its severity. Research studies have demonstrated that the BDC is highly accurate and reliable. Studies in a variety of settings, such as psychiatric emergency rooms, have indicated that instruments of this type actually pick up the presence of depressive symptoms far more frequently than formal interviews by experienced clinicians. You can use the BDC with confidence to monitor your progress as well. In my clinical work, I have insisted that every patient must fill out the test on his or her own between all sessions and report the score to me at the beginning of the next session. Changes in the score show me whether the patient is getting better, worse, or staying the same. As you apply the various self-help techniques described in this book, take the BDC test at regular intervals to assess your progress objectively. I suggest a minimum of once a week. Compare it to weighing yourself regularly when you're on a diet. You will notice that various chapters in this book focus on different symptoms of depression. As you learn to overcome these symptoms, you will find that your total score will begin to fall. This will show that you are improving. When your score is under 10, you will be in the range considered normal. When it is under 5, you will be feeling especially good. Ideally, I'd like to see your score under 5 the majority of the time. This is one aim of your treatment. Is it safe for depressed individuals to try to help themselves using the principles and methods outlined in this book? The answer is definitely yes. This is because the crucial decision to try to help yourself is the key that will allow you to feel better as soon as possible, regardless of how severe your mood disturbance might seem to be. Under what conditions should you seek professional help? If your score is between 0 and 5, you are probably feeling good already. This is in the range of normal, and most people with scores this low feel pretty happily contented. If your score was between 6 and 10, it is still in the range of normal, but you are probably feeling a bit on the lumpy side. There's room for improvement, a little mental tune-up, if you will. The cognitive therapy techniques in this book can often be remarkably helpful in these instances. Problems in daily living bug all of us, and a change of perspective can often make a big difference in how you feel. If your score was between 11 and 25, your depression, at least at this time, is mild and should not be a cause for alarm. You will definitely want to correct this problem, and you may be able to make substantial progress on your own. Systematic self-help efforts along the lines proposed in this book, combined with frank communication on a number of occasions with a trusted friend, may help a great deal. But if your score remains in this range for more than a few weeks, you should consider professional treatment. The help of a therapist or an antidepressant medication may considerably speed your recovery. Some of the thorniest depressions I have treated were actually individuals whose scores were in the mild range. Often these individuals had been mildly depressed for years, sometimes for most of their entire life. A mild chronic depression that goes on is now called dysthymic disorder. Although that is a big fancy-sounding term, it has a simple meaning. All it means is this person is awfully gloomy and negative most of the time. You probably know someone who was like that, and you may have fallen into spells of pessimism yourself. Fortunately, the same methods in this book that have proven so helpful for severe depressions can also be very helpful for these mild, chronic depressions. If you score between 26 and 50 on the BDC, it means you are moderately depressed. But don't be fooled by the term, moderate. A score in this range can indicate pretty intense suffering. Most of us can feel quite upset for brief periods, but we usually snap out of it. If your score remains in this range for more than 2 weeks, you should definitely seek professional treatment. If your score was above 50, it indicates your depression is severe or even extreme. This degree of suffering can be almost unbearable, especially when the score is increased above 75. Your moods are apt to be intensely uncomfortable and possibly dangerous because the feelings of despair and hopelessness may even trigger suicidal impulses. Fortunately, the prognosis for successful treatment is excellent. In fact, sometimes the most severe depressions respond the most rapidly. but it is not wise to try to treat a severe depression on your own. A professional consultation is a must. Seek out a trusted and competent counselor. Even if you receive psychotherapy or antidepressant medications, I am convinced you can still benefit greatly by applying what I teach you. My research studies have indicated that the spirit of self-help greatly speeds up recovery, even when patients receive professional treatment. In addition to evaluating your total score on the BDC, be sure you pay special attention to items 23, 24, and 25. These items ask about suicidal feelings, urges, and plans. If you had elevated scores on any of these items, I would strongly recommend that you obtain professional help right away. Many depressed individuals have elevated scores on item 23, but zeros on items 24 and 25. This usually means they have suicidal thoughts, such as, I'd probably be better off dead, but no actual suicidal intentions or urges and no plans to commit suicide. This pattern is quite common. If your scores on item 24 or 25 are elevated, however, this is a cause for alarm. Seek treatment immediately. I have provided some effective methods for assessing and reversing suicidal impulses in a later chapter, but you must consult a professional when suicide begins to appear to be a desirable or necessary option. Your conviction that you are hopeless is the reason to seek treatment, not suicide. The majority of seriously depressed individuals believe they are hopeless beyond any shadow of a doubt. This destructive delusion is merely a symptom of the illness, not a fact. Your feeling that you are hopeless is powerful evidence that you are actually not. It is also important for you to look at item 22, which asks if you have been more worried about your health recently. Have you experienced any unexplained aches, pains, fever, weight loss, or other possible symptoms of medical illness? If so, it would be worthwhile to have a medical consultation, which would include a history, a complete physical examination, and laboratory tests. Your doctor will probably give you a clean bill of health. This will suggest that your uncomfortable physical symptoms are related to your emotional state. Depression can mimic a great number of medical disorders because your mood swings often create a wide variety of puzzling physical symptoms. These include, to name just a few, constipation, diarrhea, pain, insomnia, or the tendency to sleep too much, fatigue, loss of sexual interest, lightheadedness, trembling, and numbness. As your depression improves, these symptoms will in all likelihood vanish. However, keep in mind that many treatable illnesses may initially masquerade as depression, and a medical examination could reveal an early and life-saving diagnosis of a reversible organic disorder. There are a number of symptoms that indicate but do not prove the existence of a serious mental disturbance, and these require a consultation with and possible treatment by a mental health professional, in addition to the self-administered personal growth program in this book. Some of the major symptoms include the belief that people are plotting and conspiring against you in order to hurt you or take your life, a bizarre experience which the ordinary person cannot understand, the conviction that external forces are controlling your mind or body, the feeling that other people can hear your thoughts or read your mind, hearing voices from outside your head, seeing things that aren't there, and receiving personal messages broadcast from radio or television programs. These symptoms are not a part of depressive illness, but represent major mental disorders. Psychiatric treatment is a must. Quite often, people with these symptoms are convinced that nothing is wrong with them and may meet the suggestion to seek psychiatric therapy with suspicious resentment and resistance. In contrast, if you are harboring the deep fear that you are going insane and are experiencing episodes of panic in which you sense you are losing control or going over the deep end, it is a near certainty that you are not. These are typical symptoms of ordinary anxiety, a much less serious disorder. Mania is a special type of mood disorder with which you should be familiar. Mania is the opposite of depression and requires prompt intervention by a psychiatrist who can prescribe lithium. Lithium stabilizes extreme mood swings and allows the patient to lead a normal life. However, until therapy is initiated, the disease can be emotionally destructive. The symptoms include an abnormally elated or irritable mood that persists for at least 2 days and is not caused by drugs or alcohol. The manic patient's behavior is characterized by impulsive actions which reflect poor judgment, such as irresponsible excessive spending, along with a grandiose sense of self-confidence. Mania is accompanied by increased sexual or aggressive activity, hyperactive continuous body movements, racing thoughts, non-stop excited talking, and a decreased need to sleep. Manic individuals